For the crimes against our children, against our community, we consign you to death.
I didn't kill any children! This is crazy!
The way of a liar is short. When this is over, there will be nothing left of you. This machine will crush your bones. L'amour will eat your rest. Your blood will be absorbed by the earth. You will die alone. Your name erased. Your memory lost. No punishment could equal this crime. But this we can do.
Justice! Jackie! Yes. Please!
I just fought! Yes. Don't try me!
Please!
Zedheads, welcome to the podcast. I'm Jason.
Je m'appelle Lucy.
Bonjour, bonjour.
Bonjour, ça va,
c'était
ça va.
Le Walking Dead cast episode. I don't know how to say 400. 479.
479. And this episode, we're covering Tales of the Walking Dead Season 1, Episode 5, Davon.
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 Davon. I figure that before we get into that episode, could open by picking a winner from our contest that we just had.
Oh, yeah. Sounds amazing. Let's do it.
Yeah. So just to remind people, we did a contest asking for people to come and follow/subscribe to at least 10 Podcastica shows on Apple Podcasts and download a couple episodes. And then they liked our contest post so we could see who entered. And you can win. Somebody will win right now. A Kirk Manley Walking Dead poster, a Here's Negan hardcover comic book, and a Podcastica t-shirt. So
excellent.
I have a list of all the people here. There's 42 of you. Thank you very much, everyone.
Nice number.
Yeah. And 42. Right on. That's the answer to everything. And
perfect.
I'm going to have Siri help us out here. Siri, pick a random number between 1 and 42. Oh, I forgot the hey part. Hey Siri, pick a random number between 1 and 42. 20, which is right in the middle. That is Andy Kordsmeyer. Congratulations to you.
Dun, da, da, da. Bonjour.
All right. So I will be in touch with Andy to figure out how to get all this stuff to you. Congratulations. And thank you to everyone who did this. I mean, we asked people to do it. The contest was just a little extra added motivation, but a lot of people just would have done it anyway, I know. And I hope that you will keep following and subscribing and consider doing it, even if you haven't already, because it would really help us out. We appreciate it.
Yay. Thanks, Andy. And all 41 others.
Yeah. Okay. So now let's talk about Tales of the Walking Dead Season 1, Episode 5, Davon. Did they pronounce his name? Was it Davin? Probably Davin, right?
Davin, but they're all like little Frenchies. They're like, Davon, Davon.
Oh, bonjour, comment ça va?
Okay. We should really have had Amélie Rochette on this.
I know, we really should have.
She is Francophone.
Crap, that's a missed opportunity.
Emily, next time.
I apologize. Next time there's anything having to do with anything French.
Yeah.
Just have her on sometime anyway.
Absolutely.
Okay, so what did you think?
I thought I was watching an X-Files episode for like the first 10 minutes. Mm. It felt properly like some of the episodes where Mulder and Scully would end up in little communities that were lots of Amish. I feel like there was one that really focused in on like sexy Amish. There was like a gender bender, sexy Amish guy. But yeah, that kind of out in the boonies, something creepy is happening in a small community. Let's go investigate it. That was the vibe I got.
In this case, we're Mulder and Scully because
Yeah. There wasn't we're really investigating.
We're just watching. Yeah.
We're just watching. We're observing and bickering. yeah, that's right. It was a strong flavor, this episode, I think. It was very... Yeah. In the UK, we talk about things being Marmite. Marmite being that little vegetable spread you can put on your toast. And mm-hmm. Marmite is very polarizing. Mm-hmm. It is very love it or hate it. I love it. Which is unusual because Scottish people don't usually love it. But it to me, this episode really struck me as like they took some bold swings. Some of them paid off, some of them didn't. And I'm psyched to talk about it.
Yeah, I thought Tales from the Crypt. I haven't seen a lot of X-Files, and what I did see was 30 years ago or whenever it was. So, but Tales from the Crypt or Creepshow, especially with the creepy corpse... Because I didn't even think of her as a zombie. It was more like this corpse that would point at things and go, "You're a murderer." It felt very yes. much like Tales from the Crypt. What else did you say about it? You said it was like...
Strong X-Files. Flavor.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, like it was so different in a lot of different ways and than most Walking Dead stuff. Mm-hmm. And I loved that. But there was a part of me that was like, okay, did they just kind of overproduce this to make up for just a so-so story? You know, there was, mm-hmm. I did feel a little bit like that, like, oh man, you need to scale back on some of that stuff. But, you know, for the most part, if I just get rid of my cynicism, I pretty much loved it. I mean, there were, mm-hmm. I didn't think it was perfect. I think there were some things about it that I didn't like as much as others, but the stuff I did like, I liked a lot. It got a 5.4 from viewers on IMDb, which is out of 10. And that's the second worst score of the six after next week's, which is 5.3 right now. But
that's interesting because the preview for next week's, without going into details, looks really similar.
Oh yeah, it does. It does. Yeah,
which surprised me. I kind of thought we were. Yeah, I think it should be. And I like the actress that's in it from Cowboy Bebop. She's great. But yeah, I'm intrigued to see how they compare to one another.
Yeah, I hope it. I hope it's not the same thing. That would be weird.
I know, right.
But I can understand why people wouldn't like it, but I did. I really did. Mm. Yeah. So what do you got?
All right. I seem to have lots of little points today, so bear with me while I kind of pull my way through them.
You can just do a whole bunch. You don't necessarily
Together. So the first one is when I was watching this episode, I kept thinking about Heath, the character in the main show who disappeared. Mm-hmm. And I keep thinking in my head, you know, Heath would be an amazing Tales of the Walking Dead because Corey Hawkins is... I think quite high profile now, so they've kind of teased us about this a lot. Yeah.
I mean, they at one point, I think they said that we'd see him in the movies with Rick when it was going to be a Walking Dead movie. Yeah. So maybe he might show up in the Rick Michonne series, you know?
I couldn't put my finger on it. I was like, is it the guy's glasses? Like, there was something. It was because Heath had those thick, square glasses, and just this idea, I was like, I wonder... This would have been really cool if it was Heath that woke up in this situation, but clearly not. But then, when I was reading up on the episode today and when I caught up with the live watch that you did, PPP turned up in this, the card that Heath could see.
Yeah, he got a loan from COVID loan.
Yeah, he got a COVID loan, payment protection plan that he's now going to claim back. But yeah, when he takes the photo out of his boot, he also has a triple P card. So that to me was quite interesting. And there were a lot of things, I guess this folds into a wider point about things that I wish I'd had time to go back and sort of look really closely at some of the flashing images.
I looked at a lot of them. But wait, before you move on from PPP, let's make sure the listeners know what that means.
So PPP, when the standalone episode in season 7, where Tara and Heath are out trying to find, I think it's food or supplies, and I believe that's when Tara finds Oceanside, she and Heath are separated. And we never see Heath again, but we see on the ground a white card with the letters PPP on it. And possibly his glasses. And that's the last we see of him. And off screen, this has been spoken about a little bit. I think Gimple confirmed that Heath had been taken by Jadis and her crew.
Yeah, I think Angela King said that was the intention.
Yeah. So the PPP card kind of comes from there. But in this episode, in some of the flashes that you see where Devon is holding the picture of his family, he's also holding a very similar card to what was found when Heath went missing. Mm-hmm.
So what do you make of that?
I don't know. I will say this. Had I not read an article, I would not have known that that was there. So I think it was almost too subtle. If they're going for something big, I'm like...
People were talking about it in... I forgot to mention, by the way, we're trying our hand at YouTube, and we decided to do some instant reaction videos, and we've only done one so far, and it was for last week's Tales of the Walking Dead, which we recorded live right after it ended at 10 p.m. Eastern, and we had some viewers, and we interacted with them, and so we're going to do more of that, and we'll probably try it out when Walking Dead comes back. So if you guys want to come and listen or watch and comment, and that would be pretty cool. But anyways, somebody brought that up when we did our live reaction, and I didn't remember seeing it, you know, the PPP mm-hmm. card in this episode. I remembered it something about it with Heath. They had to refresh my memory. But anyway, so then when I watched it again today, I still didn't notice it. So I had to go back. Oh, wait, I forgot to look for that. So yeah, you're right. But I don't think it was meant to be a big part of the story. I think it was just an Easter egg.
Yeah, I think that's got to be it. Because if it was a real like, then yeah, it really was too quick.
Reveal what's going on. But I do think maybe it means that he's part of the CRM or something, because mm-hmm. they were saying if PPP is somehow related to the people that took Rick away in the helicopter, and then we later learned that was the CRM, then maybe it means Devon is part of that or something. I don't know.
And he was... as far as we know, trying to get to Montreal, which is interesting because that, I mean, in the Walking Dead universe, I don't know that Canada exists. They don't talk about it a whole bunch. But yeah, he was trying to get there. Now we know Montreal exists in the Canada universe, in the Walking Dead universe, but
also in the Canada universe.
Also in the Canada universe. The Canada extended universe does include Montreal. I think I also agree with something you said last week, and I meant to say this at the start of the episode, which is that some of these could benefit from being two episodes. Mm. And I sort of feel like that with this one. Again, I felt like it ended really suddenly, and there was a little bit more that I would have liked to have got from it. But at the same time, it was impactful, and I enjoyed that kind of subtle allusion to the bigger universe without it being a hitting you over the head with significance thing.
So subtle, I didn't even notice it after I was told
so
about
subtle.
It.
So subtle, it took us four watches and one cracked article
and
to
two
find
podcasts,
it.
Yeah.
And two podcasts and a live reaction to and just figure it out. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I will talk about how this episode had a lot of weird, different type elements, which personally thrilled and delighted me. Mm. There were a lot of different things. There was this unreliable narrator hallucinating, mm-hmm. People speaking French. Yep. This kind of jazzy music, but it also felt, the music felt very, I don't know in what way, I can't articulate it, but it also reminded me of like it could be in Creepshow or Tales from the Crypt.
Yep.
These creepy flashbacks that were so quick, they're subliminal. You can't mm-hmm. see what's happening unless you go back frame by frame. And then, you know, I see, oh, early one of those flashbacks showed a little boy in a basement handcuffed, you know, but that just goes right into your subconscious as you're watching it, which is, it's disconcerting, but in a mm-hmm. in a cool way, if you're watching a horror movie, horror show. And then, you know, this guy handcuffed to this melty faced corpse constantly yell whispering accusations at him. That was kind of
you killed me.
No, I didn't do it.
I swear to God, my cat says stuff like that to me all the time. Feed me. I'm like, what?
You're a murderer.
Like,
huh? I am not. Stop fucking with me.
Shut up.
Just kidding. I'm pretty much a novelty seeker. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I guess I'm in the middle. I've been doing this Walking Dead podcast for 12 years, so I can't be too much of a novelty seeker, but I also look for fresh new experiences. So I think this kind of thing might be jarring for people who are used to the look and feel of the Walking Dead proper and just feel like this isn't the Walking Dead, you know? Mm-hmm. But I think it's interesting that this is a show where they not only tell new stories each week, but they've also played with the form. You know, and the Absolutely. The style and everything. and it gives the filmmakers permission to break the usual Walking Dead conventions and take a risk trying new things. Now, I have a feeling this risk is not going to pay off. Too many people are going to be like a big no and give it a 4.4 on IMDb. And I'm bummed about that because I think it's cool to try new things. And it felt, I think if people had maybe come to this not thinking of it as a Walking Dead thing, they might have liked it more. I don't know. I mean, it was pretty confusing. I'm just sort of cramming in here interesting things about it, that like the whole misty, creepy forest feel. And then it opens with this rasping Zed corpse crawling over this guy with its face mangled. That was such a great opening.
It was
what
great.
What the hell is going on here?
Trying to figure out why he wasn't getting bitten. I was like, what?
Yeah.
And then, yeah.
And then all the people in the distance with flashlights and torches. So creepy. And then the way he talks to the thing, he's like, what's happening? And he goes, murderer. And he's like, what? Or he goes, where are we? And the corpse goes, you don't remember. And I'm like, okay, thanks.
Cheers for that.
Yeah, thank you. That helps. Or one time.
Hey, just, Siri.
What's the temperature? It's cold. one time, it just pointed. That was kind of cool.
Yeah.
Also that they're in the forest was great, but also it feels like a suburban neighborhood with the torches in all the houses. It reminded me of like a Halloween movie or Freddy Krueger's neighborhood or something.
Have you seen A Quiet Place 2?
No, I haven't seen that. I should
watch
that.
Oh, it's quite good. You should watch it. There's a settlement in it that looks very like that. In fact, I wondered if they'd shared a filming location. And yeah, the houses really reminded me of the settlement you see in that film.
Check it out. The flashbacks, the way, like I mentioned, the subliminal, but also the way things were put together, like a lot of the two women smiling and happy. And then I'm like, wait, did I just see a wound festering with maggots? And then the foot was chopped off, but now they're smiling again.
And even like the way they kind of distorted the frame. So the smiles became more like Joker-like. That was so creepy.
And the music was cool. It felt like Tyler Durden in Fight Club splicing in.
Yes.
Like a big penis in the middle of a kid's movie or something. Mm-hmm. That's disturbing. Sorry. But, you know, it had that feeling like, what did I just see? I'm going to cry. And then the romantic flashback with the wistful French song. And he brings
and the rain. It was so freaking French, right?
That's such a vibe to it.
I was like, I'm vibing with this.
Yeah, it's very different for in a lot of different ways for a Walking Dead episode.
No, completely. I like all of those points, and I think you raise a good thing about the difference and the swings that they took and the kind of the really experimental feel to it. I went on when I was writing my notes, there were three things that I wrote to myself, look up. So I'm going to have my number four be Lucy Googles, because this is like the things that I ended up Googling. So the first thing I Googled was Embeth Davids, who plays Amanda, who they used her sparingly. When I saw that she was in this, I thought she would be a real kind of focal point. So I'm intrigued to know whether or not she played the Zed. Or if they got an extra in to play the Zed.
Yeah.
I have loved Embeth Davids for many years because she played Miss Honey in the 1996 Matilda film, which I really liked. And she was also in Bridget Jones' Diary and more recently in Mad Men. So she's been in lots and lots of things.
Who is she in Mad Men?
In Mad Men, she was Lane Price's wife, the British guy, Jared Harris. And she was in The Amazing Spider-Man as Mary Parker in flashbacks. So she's one of those people who's been in lots of different things, and she's a cracking actress. I really, really like her. So I Googled her to kind of see just how much she'd been in. And I thought she was great in that role and suitably creepy. The other thing I Googled was the setting. So like a lot of people, including at least one reviewer that I read today, I assumed this was French Canada. But it actually wasn't. It was a town called Madawaska or near Madawaska in Maine in the US. I have like a very specific fascination with these towns in North America that are tied to their European roots. So where we lived in Saskatchewan, we were beside a couple of towns, one of which they only really spoke German. And in a lot of the little enclaves, they all spoke Ukrainian. So it really interests me, these areas where the culture has presided. So I looked up Madawaska on good old Wikipedia. And yeah, it's a small town in Aroostook County, Maine. Population is just under 4,000, and 83.4% of the population speak French at home. I don't know that it accurately explained why everyone looked like they were dressing from colonial times. There is nothing in this about it being like everyone must wear button at the back blouses and like vaguely Amish looking shirts, but it was really cool to learn a little bit more about it. So if you are interested, do look up Madawaska.
Yeah, I read that it's they're called Acadians, and they're descendants of the French who occupied it before the British came and took everything, settled there in the 17th and 18th centuries and developed their own distinct culture. So maybe it took a lot from where they came from, but also just became distinct in and of itself. But I wonder why do you think they made that a thing for this episode? What did it add?
Well, it's on the border with Canada, so it established that Canada exists. No, I think it was about... I think there was a couple of reasons. I think to add the sense of dissociation and surrealness.
Yeah. So like, they're all wearing the same thing, and they have their palms up.
That was weird. Yeah. Very creepy. I think, the dissonance of waking up and you don't speak the language, and that giving you an extra sense of being remote from the people you're with, like, and it's so, you know, we've never really come across that in The Walking Dead proper, this idea of like there being a linguistic barrier. And there wasn't a huge barrier because everyone spoke a little bit of English, but this idea of just not quite belonging to that community and making it feel kind of otherworldly.
Totally.
And also that sense of it being so old-fashioned, like the sense of speaking European language making it seem so much more out there.
Yeah, that's good. I like all that. I mean, I think there was maybe somewhat of a linguistic barrier with the trash people, but other than that...
Oh, I mean, yeah, the trash people had a linguistic barrier with English.
Everybody else.
everyone.
But, I mean, yeah, I was thinking about that, and it's like, really, in the post-apocalyptic world, you didn't need to have an established, you know, roots that are... real world roots of this French community, because all the communities are isolated and you could just say any of them develop their own practices, you know, but it added more flavor, like you said. So
I think so. Yeah. And it is that kind of oldie timey peculiarness of it. The last thing that I Googled was there is a poster that they focus in on in a couple of shots for the Hanlons. H-A-N-L-O-N. And they, so I looked up the Hanlons today because I wanted to learn more about them. And they were, and I got this information from Britannica.com. The Hanlon brothers were an acrobatic troupe and theatrical producers in the mid 19th and early 20th century. They influenced greatly modern popular entertainment. They were English, but they traveled the world and involved a unique theatrical style that combined comedy, acrobatics, and illusions in an innovative and spectacular way. So very much kind of circus art as we know it today. One of the things that really interested me, there's a lot of like family history of like who became Hanlon and so on and so forth. But there was one of the Hanlons, the eldest brother, Thomas, in 1865, and this again is from Britannica, he suffered a serious accident while performing when he plummeted to the stage from a height and pierced his skull on a footlight. Although he survived, he became mentally unstable.
Oh my God.
By 1868, he was suicidal and hospitalized. That same year, while in custody, he killed himself. Out of the tragedy came one of the Hanlons' most significant innovations, the aerial safety net. So, I mean, good that someone invented the aerial safety net, but interesting this idea of like mental instability, head injury. I just thought that kind of fractured identity side of things was really cool and a bit unnerving. And
and wrapped up in this sort of thing that indicates a cultured couple of people, you know, that would have this thing up there.
And that kind of macabre mix of like clowning and circus and joyfulness against this sort of dark background of like injury and pain, tragedy, and suffering. So those were my Googles. That's my number four. And like all of them were very interesting to me. And I approve. Yeah, I really, really liked the idea of setting it somewhere like Manawaska.
Yeah.
I love the allusions to the Hanlons, and I love a bit of M. Beth Davids. So all three of those Googles were a thumbs up from me.
Yeah. Yeah. It's cool. It gives it a little more texture.
Yeah.
All right, my next one is how the structure of this episode made it more thrilling. Ooh. And it was, you know, we jump back and forth with these flashbacks, and the disjointed structure wasn't, at least not totally gratuitous, because it fits mm-hmm. with the story, because he was bludgeoned in the head. And yep. that means he lost his memory. And it also, I presume, means that he's hallucinating. You know, that this mm-hmm. corpse.
Yeah. What did you think was real? That was because that's a question yeah. I kind of have. Is
I'm going to talk about structure, and then my next mm-hmm. point is what actually happened, where I'm going to try to just lay out exactly what actually happened.
Excellent.
I feel like this episode is a murder mystery, and you don't know even if the protagonist is the murderer, because he doesn't know. Mm-hmm. And so that was interesting. And then he's got this corpse giving him his guilt trip. You did this to me. No, I wouldn't do that. Would I? You know, that.
Murderer. Like,
and he seems to believe he wouldn't do it, but you know how these things go. Mm-hmm. You never can tell. So that was interesting. But also when you see something like this, at least for me, I consider every single person like, okay, they probably did it. Wait, no, you know, could it have been them?
Yes.
And because of that, I thought it was Nora, because Nora was the nicest.
Oh, yeah. She was so lovely.
Yeah.
Lovely. She looked like a female Keanu Reeves. I mean, who doesn't love a female Keanu Reeves, I ask you?
Right. And she was so appealing. And oh, so I lovely. Figured it must have been her. Amanda seemed like the obvious choice, where she's saying, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes murder's mercy. You should just kill. Like, who cares? And yeah. so I'm like, well, it couldn't be her, because she's just too talking obvious. About killing. And yeah. so then I was a little disappointed that she actually was a big part of it. Now, I guess really it was her son Arnaud, and she was enabling him. So that's where the twist came, right? Mm-hmm. When I did my recap, I didn't quite grok that. I just thought, yeah, it was the one who you thought it was, but no, it wasn't her. It was her son. Uh-huh. So I guess that was the twist. But more on structure. So since he has these flashbacks keep coming back, pictures of kids, wounds, legs in shackles with chopping, and it's like, what the fuck?
So gruesome.
What the fuck is going on? And then people smiling in the middle of that, all that. And then, you know, this all je verrai, like, you will see. And I'm like, somebody's going to see something. It's not just about the piano playing. Like, maybe he's going to be killing somebody. And he'd go, I did mm-hmm. see. And then I killed or something, you know? Uh-huh. That's what I was wondering. Yeah. And then the whole, like, home movie projector feel to a lot of the flashbacks.
Just, oh, I loved that.
It was beautiful, but it also made me feel like, well, we can't trust any of this. I think this is to show the unreliableness of it. Now, it turned out, I think everything did pretty much play out exactly how it showed, but that's what I was feeling when I saw it. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know if this actually happened the way we're seeing it. So all of that was pretty intriguing to me. It made me just really attentive to the whole episode. And I mm-hmm. think some people maybe just, especially if you're not watching with full attentiveness, pretty much any show, you're not really going to get it, you know, but some shows more than others, you need to pay more attention to really appreciate it. And this show, I think if you're halfway watching it, it was just trash. You know what I mean? You can't get anything out of it if you're not paying attention.
Yeah. You have to be focusing. Yeah.
But all those elements, help me appreciate it more. Like I was saying, how this episode had a lot of things that were unique and kind of weird and different from normal Walking Dead. And there were some things that were more traditional to the Walking Dead, which I plan to talk about a little later. Those were the least interesting parts of the episode to me. All this stuff was more interesting, was what made mm-hmm. it more interesting to me.
I like those. I really like that. I mean, I'm tempted to go straight for one of mine, which was what actually happened, what was real. So maybe I'll talk about something else because I think you'll have a good breakdown of what you think happened. So I'm gonna park what was real. I'm gonna, as we would say in the UK, I'm gonna piss on your chips a little bit and just say the things that I thought were holes in the plan. So these are the three things where I was like, the biggest one for me was the method of execution. It was staged in a very horrifying way, and it was almost like The Wicker Man, and you could feel the tension. And I thought the scene was really well shot.
They have many vans, like, in case they need to kill someone.
Right,
they have
okay,
a whole fleet.
So is there a junkyard of vans? Who let this absolutely psychopathic-looking guy run the crane? Because he did not look okay. If I was looking for a child murderer, I would be pointing at the guy with the crane because he had a very murderous face.
He's in the last place he needs to be. He needs to be at the other end of this transaction.
Don't give him power. Like, but then as soon as he was in the car, I was like, well, okay, this is going to take a while. Also, like, as soon as the roof comes in, the windows are going to shatter. So, like, you could just climb out one of the windows. Like, it wouldn't be that difficult to do.
There's a lot of people there with pitchforks poking them in.
Yeah, but
actually,
on the other side, there's not. They don't circle it. They're all on one side. I'm like, rookie error, guys. So that, you know, that I had a question mark above that. But I like that they went for, it was almost like Bond villain-esque of, like, you know, they're never just like, hey, James Bond, and then shoot him in the head. They're just like, I have contrived this trap that you will sit in for 10 minutes while I explain something. And I was like, yeah, obviously they're going to go for something like this. So I'll forgive it. I cannot fathom leaving a baby bathtub full of battery acid out in your garage. Like, I just don't know in what situation you leave a tub of acid out in a garage, but okay, whatever, that's fine. I thought the mystery was definitely better than the reveal of what had happened. I was like, oh, okay, yes. I think they might have started with the idea, wouldn't it be cool if she had, like, a melted face and was, like, attached to him? And they're like, yeah. And then they're like, okay, how do we make that happen? And they're like, okay, so they're going to fight, and then there's going to be handcuffs, and then someone's going to fall in the acid. And I'm like, okay. And my final one is just, when did the child killing start? Because it seemed like this had been going on for a while, and Devon had only been there for 7 weeks. So if there's been two murders, did Arnaud just start because Devon got there? Or was it like, I wasn't quite...
Well, the only other indication of the timing on it was they said, I can't remember the details, but Arnaud and his father were out and the father got killed, right? And Arnaud got wounded. And then it was after that it started. But we don't know how old he was, so I don't know.
Okay.
And we don't know how often he does it either.
That was my other side eye, was I was a bit like,
because if it had been going on before Devon got there, then
That was my thing. Yeah. Devon, I'm sure it hadn't, but I am also a bit like, those were my three nitpicks, but I do actually think that the episode rose above those generally, so I'm willing to let them slide. I'm going to be, like, charitable to those.
For some reason, I don't know, I like the whole digger machine crushing down on the van. It was just so intense. And then when he was screaming, I know there's another boy, it's your son, I just had a flashback.
Conveniently, like, I just remembered.
And she's like, oh, what if he knows? And the other guy's like, he's just trying to, you know, get out of this. And then when it smashed down, she let out a scream. That was really chilling. So I was pretty into it. But then, yeah, someone, I think in the chat, or maybe it's listener feedback, or like, how do they fuel that thing? And I'm like, yeah, how do they feel?
One of my favorite characters in this episode was over-the-top elderly Frenchman who's like, you have killed him! You will attack our children! And I was like, wow, this guy really likes being French. He's like, you're a horrible murderer!
He's not even
like,
French, great. Probably.
No, he's probably from Idaho. But he really got into it, and I super respected that. It really amused me. He also just had this look of, like, angry village man shouts at sky, which I really enjoyed. Those are my small nitpicks.
Fun part,
but
I'm
as I say, oh my god, fun part. We would like angry and French, if you could do that. He also looks incredibly like a UK politician called Jeremy Corbyn. So I was like, oh, angry French Jeremy Corbyn shouting at everyone. It was great.
I mean, if I got that part, I would ad lib in Sacre bleu. And they'd be like, no,
Sacre
cut.
You're just being offensive now. We're like, oh, sorry. You took it too far.
I'm actually apologizing now, too.
Yeah, I'm like, sorry, everyone. Sorry to our French listeners. I don't know that we have many French listeners. But,
we have Amelie,
sorry.
Who's French.
We have Amelie. Amelie, I'm so sorry.
Okay, so what actually happened? So Devin was on his way to Montreal to reunite with his family. He was on vacation from the CRM or something.
And, he was on annual leave.
Right. And he met a bad person, a bad guy in the woods, but he wouldn't shoot the guy, so the other guy shot him and for some reason didn't finish him off.
Yeah, and shot his leg and then whipped out.
Ran away. And then Nora and Amanda find him out there in the woods and they help him. Can you walk? And they take him back home. Someone chops off his leg.
I thought his leg might have rotted. The wound had rotted, maybe?
Yeah. Yeah, and so they needed to amputate. We see someone in one of those hats, and it may have been the boy. What's the kid, the murderer kid's name?
Arnaud,
but it could have just, they all wear the same clothes, so I couldn't really tell. And so then they, you know, we see him in bed with his fever, and they're tending to him, and they help him recover. They make a prosthetic for him, which I didn't even notice, you know, in the first time through. Nora is really encouraging. You're doing really good with the leg. You'll be marching off in no time. And then he is walking. But if you watch, you'll see one of his legs is really stiff. He and Amanda start to fall in love. It seems he's bringing her strawberries.
It's very cute.
Yeah. They had great chemistry.
Piano.
So good.
So French sexy. It's just sexier when it's French, right?
Yeah. I mean, and two, there's a lot of TV and movie romances where it doesn't, I mean, I got the feeling that these two actors probably really thought they were, each other were attractive, or else they're just really good actors, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And they're both pretty hot. So then he was in his room and he heard a boy who turned out to be Garen, Nora's son, speaking some French, counting or something through a vent.
It was the fruits. It was like fraise, citron,
other ones
that I've forgotten. That's the limit of my French fruit remembering, but yes.
Les haricots verts. No, that's green beans.
Pamplemousse.
Davin went down there, found him cuffed, found another kid down there cuffed and dead. And Gareth was there also handcuffed but alive and didn't look like he was in great shape. So he somehow got the cuffs off. He stuck something in there. It could have been a key that was nearby or a screwdriver. I don't know. Amanda came down and caught him. She said, "This place is not for you. This place is not for anyone. Sometimes murder is mercy." And then Garen took off running for the stairs because the door was open. And Amanda grabbed his leg. And then Davin ran after them. Amanda was partway up the stairs. She started kicking him in the head, and Garen ran away, got away. Then Davin had the cuffs on him, so he put them on himself and Amanda. They struggled. They fell over. She landed face first in this acid, which was pretty gruesome. I'm melting, is what I thought.
It was so grim. So, and I was thinking also of the Golden Crown from Game of Thrones.
Oh, right. And I presume that that was there to help them get rid of the bodies, but I don't know. Because I've watched Breaking Bad.
Well,
so anyone who's watched Breaking Bad would think that's what acid is for.
But then you see the bodies in the hole.
There were a couple of bodies in a pit at the end. Yeah, but that's what
there
I thought.
There could be others.
I don't know. So then Arnaud comes in and sees what's happening. He picks up some blunt thing, a hammer, and whacks Davin in the head. And then presumably goes off and catches Garen and takes him to that little cabin we see at the end. Keeps him there. I don't know. Then Davin stumbles out carrying Amanda's corpse because he's handcuffed to it, shouting help, stumbles to the woods, collapses. And this is where we see him at the opening of the episode out there. And the villagers in the distance are coming for him because they maybe Arnaud said, "Davin killed my mother and carried her to the woods." So Amanda's corpse is, Amanda's corpse is talking to him because he was hit in the head. Now, what I thought was really going on was that she was a zombie, a walker, mm-hmm. but her face melted shut so she couldn't bite him.
That was my understanding of it. And then the only thing that confused me was the pointing. But I imagine he hallucinated the pointing.
Yeah, he hallucinated all of it. Yeah, the talking, the pointing. And you also see him hit her over, try to fight her with the prosthetic leg in that first scene, which is his. But then I presume he puts it back on and walks off. Then she's going 897. And I'm like, why are you counting down? But it's the address 897.
So. I fully thought that as well. I was like 897. And then it took me ages to be like, oh no, that's the wrong order. No, that's not right.
You know what? I didn't even realize that until I just said it.
It's like, duh. Huh? And I was like,
So he can't get in. Then she points to the garage. He goes in and sees, or are they in the basement already? I don't know. Bits of flesh on the floor and this vat of acid. So yeah, they must be. And she goes, this is where you killed me. I wouldn't do that. Then he saws off her hand, smart, to detach himself. And then he's in the basement and the boy that was there before dead is now a zombie. So he knifes it. And then what looks like Amanda comes in and puts a bag over his head. But given that Amanda's this corpse that he just saw the hand off, it must have been somebody else. And
it must have been Nora.
Yeah, Nora. Yeah. Nora, you're right. Yeah, God. Then he's tied to this gravestone or something.
Yeah, gravestone or pole or something. Yeah, unclear.
Angry townspeople all around. They demand that he tell them where the bodies are. And this.
Where are our children? Murderer!
And Arnaud says, she saved you and you killed her. And then they grab him and take him to the van, the killing spot.
The killing van.
And for crimes against our children, against our community, we can sign you to death.
And, they're so extra. I love it.
And then his memory's mostly back at this point because he's saying, no, I didn't do this. Amanda did it, which is what he would think at this point. Mm-hmm. And then start to smash the van. And then he remembers, oh, there's a boy. He's alive. And so then Nora tries to convince them to let him live. And there's other people who are like, yeah, let him out. And other people are like, no. So they all start fighting each other, the townspeople. Mm-hmm. And then Digger starts crushing the van. And Nora stops the guy who's driving it. But the townspeople are busy fighting each other. And Devon gets out and he sees Arnaud slinking off. So he follows him. And he follows him to where he has Garen locked up in that little cabin. And Arnaud saying, giving him, it's either candies or poison. I guess it really was candy because he seemed all right.
Said, I had like, one I had, more bite I'd and
you'll feel better, I promise.
I had poison candies written down. Yeah. So that's my guess.
But then he seems okay. I don't know. So I don't know. Maybe it just takes a while and he's going to die. I hope not.
I think they were slowly poisoning them. The method of killing wasn't super clear. I also, it's like, true. Had we seen Garon before we found out he was missing? Because I was like, huh? Nora's got a kid?
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't remember for sure.
I think that was maybe just me being a bit dumb.
I don't know. Because they were all at the table at one point.
Yeah.
When they were talking about what happened to Arnaud's dad, and I don't remember this kid being there, but I'd have to go back and look.
He was very small. He could have been there.
His head doesn't peek over the edge of the table.
Un petit jeu.
So then Devon confronts Arnaud and he says his mother tried to save the first one that he killed, but then he realized what would happen if the kid told, so she left the kid in the woods, Martin or something. So yeah, maybe they were poisoning him slowly. Anyway, so this kid Arnaud is nuts and his mom has rationalized it all because she wants to help, you know, not have her son be in danger, especially after she almost lost him. So anyway, Devon starts screaming for Nora, and all the townspeople come there, and one of them sees her zombie kids, I presume, in a pit. And this little kid, Garen, tells Nora that Devon stopped Arnaud and Arnaud is bad. So they all beat him and throw him into the pit with the two Zeds, and Devon leaves disgusted.
Yep.
And scene.
I completely agree with all of that. I think that makes, yeah, that tracks with my understanding of what had happened. Mm-hmm. I, on the second watch, was also impressed because I realized that Arno is genuinely upset when his mum dies because his mum is the one who's helping him get away with things. Mm-hmm. So his anger at Devon is very justified.
Yeah, so his mother, Amanda, is basically mm-hmm. what happens when parents don't tell their bad kids to look at the flowers.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Major Lizzie vibes. Mm-hmm. That is all I'm saying. Major Lizzie vibes. This is what happens. Although, how far do we take that? Like, how far is he right that it's better to do that? I mean, obviously it's not okay to kill kids. I'm not mm-hmm. saying that. But how far does his logic take us of the world fucks you up?
Oh, well, I would say, you know, it's interesting in the way that, so there were a few, like I said, things that felt more Walking Dead-ish that were the least interesting to me, but mm-hmm. this is one that's a little interesting. Like, okay, can you understand why he would think that? He says, this world makes you twisted and I want to spare these kids from it. Murder is mercy. And if you think about what kinds of things the people in The Walking Dead have mm-hmm. been put in a position to do, the one that stood out to me was when Michonne killed all those kids that were about to kill her.
And oh, it was shit. Either her or yes. them, right?
But then if you ask Michonne, look, would you rather have lived through that or been killed as a child? I'm pretty sure she would say, I'd rather be alive today, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I just think that, I mean, you don't take someone's life without their permission. You know, that seems
no, I think
pretty
that's,
obvious,
yeah.
but yeah.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. It's a very twisted logic.
Yeah.
That
you could sort of understand why someone would go there who was nuts, but it's no, it's a big no.
It was interesting to see him taking out his fear and unhappiness by killing kids, you know, by making it so that they wouldn't experience that, mm-hmm. but in doing so becoming even more horrific.
He's a psycho.
He is 100% a psycho. Yes, I believe it is my number two.
Mm-hmm.
Or one?
Or some number. I don't know. I don't really keep track of the numbers anymore.
Some yeah, number. Should we talk about the sexy saxophone music?
Sure.
I've seen a lot of people be very critical of this music in mm-hmm. reviews. I kind of loved it. I did too.
It was moody.
Extra. But it was so moody. And it was a sort of mix of sexy French cinema, but also film noir.
Yeah.
Especially with the like rainy scenes and the figuring out the mystery.
Yes.
And I thought that really worked very, very nicely.
I don't like I wouldn't sit there and listen to that music on my own time or, you know, just by itself, but
no.
I thought it worked well in the episode. It was a bit like it really stood out. And so maybe, I don't know yeah. if that may be a little extra, like you said, but I liked it.
No, I liked it. I really enjoyed it. A lot of people are like, what the fuck is this music? And I'm like, no, I like it. It's really cool. I've also just noticed underneath my thing about I love the music is my favorite line from the Angry Frenchman was like, he like describes the whole execution. He's like, and your blood will be absorbed by the earth. Like, he just goes like, he loves describing
something about it. You will be eaten by les morts, which I love.
Les morts.
That's what they call them. Because it means the dead. That's good.
It's 100% amazing. And I would watch a spin-off that was just that guy being really dramatic in the apocalypse.
Back. Yeah, we, oh, we need to 100%. Have an episode. They should have had a seventh episode that brought together the best characters from all the previous six.
The best one-offs.
Parker Posey.
And this random French dude. Oh, I would watch the hell out of that.
Who would be from the first one? I think Olivia Munn. One. Well, probably Terry Crews. I don't know. Either one
the
of them.
Dog. The dog from the start. I love that dog. So yeah, that for me, the music was one of my points. It's not a big point, but I just thought it was really cool. I don't know if we can have a sample from it or something, but no, I loved it. I thought it really added the kind of sense of this being a little independent film.
Yeah, that's cool. Okay, my next one's pretty short too. Just the character of Davin, played by Jesse T. Usher. He's A-Train on The Boys. Do you watch that show?
I don't watch The Boys, but I've heard this is a big contrast to his character.
He's a total asshole on that show, but most people on that show are assholes.
Yeah.
But it was great to see him play a different character than that, you know? Because as much as I always say, I think we should separate the character from the actor. On that show, it's hard not to look at, like, when I first saw he was in this, I was like, that guy. But yeah. No, I'm really glad. I thought he looked great. The glasses. I enjoyed his character, the way it was almost like a little bit of a buddy comedy with this corpse being like, you're a murderer. No, I wouldn't do that.
One of my favorite things was when he was sawing the hand off. His head was like, eh. Eh. I was like, wouldn't you be like, fuck, ow, fuck? It's just like, ow, no. It really made me laugh.
And I like that it turned out he actually wasn't a murderer and he doesn't like killing. And, you know, Nora told him you can choose to be good. And that is what he's always done. I mean, there's that debate about whether you should kill, which is the typical Walking Dead thing that I'm so bored with. But anyway, it was nice. Like, he would have been one of those moral compasses in The Walking Dead proper, you know, and therefore would have been dead by now on that show. So I enjoyed the character. And I also thought that, as I said, she was very appealing. Nora. And that they were a great couple together.
Yeah. I think I don't really have a number one so much as just there were a lot of lines in this episode that were quite good. I think the dialogue was sparse, which added to the independent film feel of it. But there were some things that were obviously very symbolic. So, like, the scar is worse than the wound, like the memory is worse than the thing that happened,
or how it changes you and things like that.
The whole je verrai thing of like, I see or you will see. There was a bit of a snarky line about this was the French land before someone decided it wasn't, and someone saying that sounds familiar, and I was like, yep, we you know, Britain and America are colonizers, so yes, good to remember that. Sometimes I forget this is America, so kind of leaning into the kind of surreality of the French landscape. Amanda saying stuff like, some people shouldn't be alive in the first place the way things are, massive red flag. They ask, what's in Montreal that will make your life worth saving? And he doesn't answer. So that's potentially a plot thread for the wider universe.
Well, she says some people shouldn't be alive the way things are. And it turns out maybe her son is a prime example of that.
So yeah, I was going to say, nice let us look at your child. The Arnold, I thought Arnold's monologue was quite heavy-handed, but there were some things in it I liked. It wasn't so much in the monologue, but when he says to the child, I know how hard it is to be little, you don't know what to be afraid of, I thought that was quite an affecting line. And growing up here makes you twisted, sometimes murder is mercy. Very true. I mean, he's not wrong. And that's that. I wasn't sure how it was all going to turn out. At one point, I thought somehow Davon was still going to get blamed for it. Like, there was going to be something, some misunderstanding. Because, you know, the way these episodes have been going, some of the endings have been quite, I don't know, brutal. So I think there was part of me that is like, oh, this isn't going to go well. But he's depressed, has lost his sexy new French girlfriend and is like limping off into the distance. So I would say not great, but at least he's alive.
Yeah.
It was a brutal end for Garon, I have to say. Very brutal.
Beat this guy.
Oh, him spitting out the blood and then getting thrown in with the kids. Bloody hell. That was hard to watch.
But this damn kid, Arnold, as he's being thrown into the pit, is still screaming out, Davon did it!
Yeah, I know.
Fucker. Come on, you're about to die. Don't...
It was whom? I'm like, come on, mate. You've been caught. And then that final ending with this, I've written sad French plinky plonky music. Je verrai. It was a brutal ending, I think. Very kind of messy, emotional episode in that sense.
Maybe that's another reason why people don't like it, because it was a downer ending. And much like a lot of anthology shows, you know, I think Twilight Zone did that a lot, ended on a down note. And I enjoy that sometimes, but I know some people don't like it at all.
I go back and forth on this. Sometimes the most affecting things are the ones that stick with you.
Yeah.
But then other times you want TV to make you feel better. Absolutely. And it's hard to...
I need a mix.
It's hard to know.
Like, I'm podcasting on Cobra Kai alongside this, and it's a great balance, you know?
That's such a good tonic.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so I like both.
Yeah, that's absolutely fair. That was kind of my number one, I guess.
Sweet. Okay, so my last one is about the Walking Dead-y things, the crazy killers rationale, which we already kind of talked about, and also the question of whether you should kill total yawner at this point. God, I don't care. And so the ending was was a bit like, all right, they just kind of made the whole reasoning behind why we got this really innovative, interesting, cool, fun episode, a typical Walking Dead scenario, and I cared the least about that. Mm-hmm. But anyway, the whole thing about should you kill, what should the parameters be around killing, and if you believe you're bad, you will be, but if you believe you're good, we decide who we are, all that. And Devon, having always decided he doesn't want to kill. And he said at one point, we should have rules. Laws work most of the time. Usually it's just the people who make them that don't. And when they just threw Arnone in the pit at the end, that was the thought I had. They need a codified system of justice. But then watching the second time, well, they kind of did. They all vote. You put your palm up if you want to kill somebody. That's their rules.
Yep.
But they don't
justice!
Really, but they don't have due process, though. That's what they're missing.
There is not due process. And I would say it's very emotional led rather than rational.
Yeah, it is. And that's what he was screaming about. Like, he's like, you know, now look at this. It was him, not me. And what if you'd killed me? And then these kids kept dying because of him. Wouldn't you feel bad then? And I'm kind of thinking, you know, they just found out that this kid who's their leader's son killed a bunch of their own children. Maybe you shouldn't be making this about you right now. You have some good points, but it's not the most important thing on people's minds.
You would have killed me too. Don't you feel bad about yourselves? It's like, I mean, possibly, but like, it's not the point.
It's like, I mean, hey, the murder of our kids is right here. Can we handle this first? And then we'll handle that. You got your feelings hurt. So
it's a little bit like Devon, just calm down. Just sit down.
Hold on.
Just
sit
this
chance.
One out. Sit this one out, buddy. Like, give it a minute.
So anyway, I mean, we could even go more into all that stuff, but it does feel like themes that have been trod over many a time with the show, and I'm least interested in all of it.
Oh yes, and we still don't do we know the answers? Who knows? We're still discussing them.
Right, like this kid, like he if they had a prison, maybe they could lock him up and try to rehabilitate him, blah blah blah, I don't know.
Yeah, is there? They could make a juvie, like French juvie. I'm sure would be very classy.
And the guy could come in and yell at him through the bars.
You will go down to the earth. Like, okay,
you are bad.
You're bad. You're sinful. Like, okay, calm down. Oh, amazing. Any notes? Do I have any notes? Apparently, if you watch some of the flashback scenes, you can see things like Arno hanging around in the background like a shadowy figure.
Watching,
I was wondering how Davon knew where to go, like when he's shrouding the Zed and carrying her home, but you know, I guess he had I guess with amnesia you don't necessarily forget everything, you forget most recent stuff, so and that's fine.
I think, you know, he was hallucinating. Wait, you weren't sure how he knew what?
How, where to take the body, like who it was, when he figured out who that was.
You mean it was Amanda, so he went to her house because the corpse whispered 897 to him. That's how.
Yeah,
but that was just his own subconscious telling him.
Yeah, so he had the memory somewhere and just wasn't right.
Came out in a weird way. Yeah,
I got it. What other? I've only got two more. Would you eat strawberries in a salad?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I think so. I think, but fruit in a salad is acceptable.
Strawberry, I do. Yeah, but the thing she said about vinegar helping the flavor come out made me want to go and test it. I think it's probably better to just eat the strawberry by itself, but now I want to try that and see.
Oh, if you have it, it's like
I mean, I have tried vinegar. It, but I never paid attention.
Yeah, you know, I think in
it helped the flavor come out.
Yeah, balsamic vinegar and strawberries is meant to be very good. I've never tried it, but it is meant to be very good. And I just laughed because the strawberry looked like a butt.
I have tried it, but then I was whacked over the head, and now I can't remember anything.
Now I can't remember. I was playing piano with my sexy French girlfriend, ate a strawberry covered in vinegar, woke up next to her dead mum, whose face had melted off, and I was like, what a night, man,
and she's
what
like,
a night.
Strawberries!
Eat the strawberry that looks like a butt. Like, okay. All in all, a top night. Thus concludes my very mature notes.
Okay, I only have two left. So there's one of my favorite things about this series is the title sequence with the six images of the episodes. And at first, I couldn't tell which episode this opening resolved to. The two that were left were the cemetery and this woman standing outside a lighted window. But it turned out it was the cemetery because it resolved into the creepy corpse walking next to a cemetery. Mm-hmm. So the last one that we have is this woman just kind of creepily standing right in front of a house looking through a lighted window with a big red moon in the background.
Ooh, creepy.
We'll see. 5.3 on IMDb.
5.3 on IMDb. Check it out now.
And the last one is just that in this episode, kind of that they're in the zombie apocalypse is almost irrelevant. You know, there were some zombies on the, I mean, then again, Amanda, what I think was a zombie the whole time. So that was pretty important to the story, I suppose. He could walk her around instead of having to carry her.
Yeah, fair points.
Yeah. All right. That is it for our breakdown of the episode. We will take a little break. There's more to come. Stay with us.
Pit. I was in the pit. You were in the pit. We all were in the pit. The pit. I fell in the pit. You fell in the pit. You were in that pit. Oh, the pit. I fell in the pit. You fell in the pit.
Threat to untold numbers of citizens.
The people it kills get up and kill.
Are they slow moving, Chief?
Yeah, they're dead. They're all messed up.
This is a Walking Dead cast news update.
Okay, Norman Reedus talked with Entertainment Weekly about an injury he suffered on set earlier this year, March 11th, while filming the Walking Dead finale. I think we'd heard something about that, but didn't know too much about it at the time. But he said, oh, dude, that was horrible. That whole ordeal for me personally was terrifying. I thought I was going to die. It was very serious. I've been hit in the face and the head a million times. I've gone through car windows, but that one rung my bell. I had a neurologist. I had all sorts of shit. I failed the light test. I had a security guard in the driveway just in case. I was holding onto the walls, walking through the rooms. It was nuts.
Holy shit.
Sounds pretty bad. On the very last episode, too. What a bummer, man.
Oh, my God. What a portent. Like, it's ending. Your life is at an end.
The show doesn't need you anymore.
God.
So, anyway, I hope he's fully recovered and totally fine.
He's got bad eyesight because of an accident, doesn't he? Like, one of his eyes has a...
Sensitive to light.
One of his eyes is, like... platinum or titanium? Titanium would make more sense than platinum, but like his eye socket has been put in or something. That was very well explained by Dr. Lucy there.
I didn't know that, but I know his left foot is ceramic, weirdly enough. I'm just kidding. And he has a bionic arm.
And his right hand is made of silicon, yeah.
It's crazy. He's been through a lot. This next one, there was an article, one of those long ruminating Entertainment Weekly articles about the last shooting day of The Walking Dead. I recommend checking it out. But I'll read some interesting bits. AMC president Dan McDermott said that something interesting about all the spinoffs that will be out after The Walking Dead wraps was, quote, we spend a lot of time focusing on how much is the right amount. The last couple of years we've had 16 episodes of The Walking Dead, 16 episodes of Fear the Walking Dead, 10 episodes of Walking Dead World Beyond. That's 42 episodes of television. That's a lot. And he points out that's more than what's coming up under the new plan in 2023. Going forward, the Rick and Michonne show is 6 episodes. Daryl Dixon's going to be 6. Maggie and Negan's going to be 6. We have Tales of the Walking Dead. So you're actually going to see fewer hours of The Walking Dead content on our platforms.
I note that he very judiciously did not mention Fear in that sentence. Because even one episode of Fear is too many. But here we go.
Let's see. Yeah. If Tales was 6 for season 2, which usually they're longer, but let's say that. Rick and Michonne is 6. That's 12. Daryl would be 18. Maggie and Negan would be 24, right? So, yeah. So Fear would just have to be less than 16 or 18 to make it less than 42. Yeah, it'll be less, not much less. But.
And is Tales renewed?
No. I mean, it's not renewed, but we have not heard.
I hope it does. I kind of do hope it does.
I have a feeling it might not, but I hope it does. One more season.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah. About Walking Dead ending, Angela King said, we didn't know the exact timing of the release of information of Isle of the Dead, which is now known as City of the Dead with Maggie and Negan. I assume
they've changed the name. They've changed the name.
Oh yeah, I'll didn't know that. I was thinking the AMC executives were like, Isle of the Dead, what a great name. Isle of the Dead. I love the dead. Oh wait.
I love the dead. I love the dead. Oh no.
That's not true. That's not true. I don't love the dead. So anyway, she goes, I assume that wasn't going to be announced, the whole Maggie Negan spinoff. So it does change the way certain things are going to play in the Walking Dead season, you know, the rest of it, compared to how we thought they would play. The approach that we took was that for the people who've been following the show, the series need to feel like there is an ending that's for the show. If there was nothing else beyond this, we just know that certain characters have to be alive at the end. How, I don't even know what I'm saying here, but that's kind of a bummer because, she's saying, you know, maybe there was some tension about whether Maggie or Negan made it out of the series, but now that's gone.
Yeah, it must be frustrating, I think, when you're in that position that Angela Kang's in of, like, the network are really taking a steer on what they're going to reveal and not reveal. And as a storyteller, that must be really frustrating.
It must be, completely, yeah.
Bums me
they're,
out
They're speaking
hear,
out about you know. It, so you know it really bothers them if they're going to actually say something.
100%.
And then about the ending, Gimple says, we definitely didn't want to just make it a setup. We wanted to have a conclusion to The Walking Dead. We didn't want to do anything that nailed the door shut, but this season is about closing a season and closing a series in a satisfying way that speaks to all the themes and all the history of the show. So I'm glad they at least had that on their mind.
When he says door nailed shut, I'm just thinking, don't dead open inside from the first episode. I'm like, oh, that's nice.
They talked a little bit about Daryl's show. Rita has been living over in France for production on his show.
Is he angrily shouting at the villagers beating them up? Yeah.
He says, we knew we wanted to make a show that went in the opposite direction of The Walking Dead just because we didn't want to do the same thing. So our zombies are nice. No, just kidding. and it's going to be way different. The story is way different. The characters are way different. There's a different tone, different light, different sound. It's a whole different vibe. This is going to be fucking epic.
All right. I hope that it is like proper, just like existentialist French film of like,
yeah.
He's today got I looked mime, out and saw a zombie.
Mime makeup on.
Yeah.
That's more Norman Reedus smoking a cigarette.
Yeah, smoking a roll up, drinking a glass of red wine. Like, the zombies here are of a more tender kind. Like, okay.
And then, and the zombies all say, we, we.
We, 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 we.
And then there's Dead City, which the AMC president says follows Negan and Maggie's journey onto the Isle of Manhattan, where this is a little spoiler, but I think it's okay to reveal this little detail where bridges and tunnels were blown up at the onset of the pandemic because the Walker herd had just overrun the island and it's been left that way for 12 years. And it's now a 2 million Walker strong herd that's dominating the streets and making it treacherous and dangerous. So that sounds like could be kind of cool.
So why the food? Or are they going in there?
Go in there? I know. A, it's a diamond heist or something.
Oh my goodness. One can only hope.
And what's his name? Jeffrey Dean Morgan said, I think The Walking Dead ending and walking away from it would have been a noble thing for us all to do, but the story was so good and so worth telling that it simply came down to I couldn't say no. Plus, they gave me a shitload of money. Thank you.
Would it be a noble thing to do, full stop, editor adds in, but they offered you a lot of money, Jeffrey, yeah. So let's pretend that we're really happy about it. Like, oh my God.
Lori Cohan said, the story that showrunner Eli Jornet has written lets us really go into the dark night of the soul in the way that you don't always get to do with a huge cast. When people say to me, wow, you've been doing that show so long, I say, and they keep raising my salary. No, I'm just kidding. And I hope I do it forever.
They keep raising, famously not in season 8, so you know.
But they got her back, so
they got her back, so they must have done it.
Negotiation happened there.
I am so intrigued to see, I say I'm so intrigued to see where that spinoff's going. I'm kind of intrigued to see where it's going, but if it's going anywhere near the Bone Zone, I am out. I'm out.
Please,
No, they couldn't.
Yeah, they just need to be like captains of rival gangs trying to kill each other.
Yeah,
or something.
West Side Story.
It said that article said a little some more spoilery things about, well, in particular the Daryl one, but I don't want to say them here, so you should read it.
Oh, okay.
And they talked a little bit about the Rick and Michonne series and nothing that interesting, but they asked Angela Kang if we'd see Rick before that series. And she said, I can't answer that question, but I appreciate you asking. I'd never tell you that in a million years.
So that's a yes then. I think it is, right?
Like if it was then they would want to set expectations, you would think, and say, don't expect that. Because that's what they said for World Beyond. No Rick in this. Don't.
I would love it if at the end of this show, as we know it, we see Rick and Michonne and their series is about how they got there. Yeah. That would be my enjoyment. I don't think that's what's going to happen, but that would be, to me, a good way of doing it. Or but it's probably not going to happen.
They come rolling up, horse and carriage, trailed by a bunch of clinking cans that says, just married. And they're like, what's up
kids, and they're like, fuck you mom and dad,
you're not my father anymore,
where the hell have you been, Daryl's our dad now, and they're like, well, funny story, he's going to France.
We just knocked his ass out, put him on a ship.
Lol.
Oh boy. All right.
We should write for the show.
This is
we
why
should
we're
write
not
for
writers.
Him.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then last, I read a rumor, but it was only on one site and probably not true, but it was too delicious, the idea of it, not to repeat here, which is that Fear the Walking Dead is ending its run with season 8.
Oh God, please. God, please.
Please be true.
Oh, I would trade so much for that. It would just make me so happy because I don't even really watch it anymore, but just knowing that nobody else could would make me so happy.
Well, wait, did you watch the Madison episode?
Oh, yes. Yeah. I wish I hadn't.
That was the last one. It was really bad.
It was so bad. Like, I think Kim, like, what have they got on Kim Dickens? What did she do that they've got blackmail on her for? Because, like,
it's her twin sister.
Shim Shickens.
Yeah. So, anyway, all right, let's move on to listener moans, groans, grunts. We're going to see that no one agrees with us. Go ahead.
Yep. First one from Angie Hill Reynolds says, couldn't get through this one. Yep.
Straight to the point. Megan O'Connell, strange one. Was this another one in the future? Felt like a Salem witch trial. I don't know if we really know the timeline, but I don't think it was important to the story, really.
Yeah. Renee Murray, hey Renee, says, this was a good storyline, but the execution of it was awful. This episode had my head hurting. Facepalm emoji times two.
Yeah, she and I have the opposite opinion. I thought the execution was great for a mediocre story. She said, good story, execution awful. Takes all kinds, right, Renee?
Opposite day.
Gemma Hall says, I hated it. I couldn't cope with the flashbacks and distorted time or the walker he was dragging about. I just didn't get it and found the episode almost unwatchable. It reminded me of The Village, I think. I never saw that. M. Night Shyamalan. I don't like his movies that much. So
Midnight. Matthew Rimmer says, unfortunately, I thought it was absolutely dreadful. One of the worst episodes in the Walking Dead universe ever. The main character was unclear about what was happening, and so was I. And as the pieces of the puzzle started to fall in place, I had no idea why we were being told this unpleasant tale. Matthew, that is... Oh, Matthew, that quote, I just want to use it in meetings that I have to sit through where I'm like, I have no idea why we're being told this unpleasant tale. That's brilliant.
I think Matthew would make a good TV review writer.
Oh, I would love that. I love it. You should write for The Guardian, Matthew. Perfect.
Des Combs says, I wish I had something good to say about this episode. I know they're trying to use different styles, but with this one, they couldn't decide which style they were using. Fair enough. Sometimes it was a morality play. Sometimes it was a film noir. Frankly, more than any, it was a comedy, unintentionally. Every time Davin would hallucinate the walker with him, I would laugh out loud at how silly it was. I'm sure if the walker had more close-ups, we could have seen her eyes rolling at him. All in all, this felt like an introduction for Davin in Fear of the Walking Dead. That's low.
You're making me think of, like, everywhere you go, always take the walker with you. It's just like
see him on a roller coaster.
Yeah, my best friend and me. Alma Contreras says, this one was a strange one. So far, I am not really liking these tales. I thought that if I watched a second time, I would get it, but I still didn't like it. I'm hoping the cast will sway me. I feel like it took too long to show us what had happened with Devon. I wasn't too thrilled with the style they used to show Devon's hazy memories, like it was an old film. All it did was confuse me. Then the music destroyed me. I kept waiting for Dick Tracy to step in. LOL. And what is it about him imagining that the walker was talking to him and pointing the way? Just not a good story. It was just meh to me. Fair enough.
Nathan Eshelman says, I loved it. With the jazzy music, it kind of felt like a noir detective mystery, and just like Davin, we had to put the pieces together. A lot of times in The Walking Dead, the moral compass is seen as a liability, so I was happy to see that every time in this episode when Davin stood by his convictions, it felt justified and worthwhile. I would debate that's what debates are about.
Yeah. Penny Lennox says, I loved it. Using old film or an old film filter to evoke the feeling of memory and distortion was cool. It had a feel very much like the Salem witch trials or some community lost in time. Reminded me a little of From, which I believe we're podcasting on.
Yeah, Alex and Lizzie are podcasting about that, yeah. Excellent. And they're interviewing actors from it too. It's pretty cool.
Ooh. Penny goes on to say, Devon is a very sympathetic character and I never believed he murdered someone. I think that this anthology show format is a great way to experiment with different narrative styles and aesthetic techniques. The main show needs to be pretty consistent, but here there's such low risk episode by episode, it gives them freedom to go in new directions and work with new people. We've been watching The Walking Dead for 12 years and lots of people complain when it tries new things, myself included. Change for the sake of change can be a good way to reinvigorate the universe and generate ideas for the serial shows. Thanks, Penny. And you can hear Penny on our network podcasting on She-Hulk at the moment.
She-Hulk with Greg and The Rings of Power with Anwen.
Excellent. Thanks, Penny.
Yeah, both of those are great. They're doing really, really cool stuff. I listen as a fan. I love it. Mm-hmm. Fred Weisinger says, overall, this was a pretty weak episode. I like some of the stylish elements. Devin's flashback starting out with an old movie type effect with both visual and audible scratchiness. And I was intrigued by the refurbished old clothes look, which made me think this might have been set in the far future. People need to make clothes from whatever they can find or wear it until it's worn out. Yeah, but Devin had regular clothes on, but yeah, maybe. I think it's just because they've been by themselves for so long. I don't know.
I think they're just very, very fashionable. We just don't appreciate it.
Very mod. All the townspeople were wearing shades of blue, gray, black, but Davin had an orange jacket making him stand out a bit. But nothing else gave me any hint as to why those elements might have been chosen except to try to cover up a weak plot. It established a feel to the episode, granted, but that's as far as it went. I mean, I think they tried to really say that these people had been here for a long time and stayed very insular. So maybe their clothes wore out and they just didn't want to go out and get them from somewhere else. I don't know. That's what I would say. On the negative side, the plot struck me as pretty simple, and I didn't like the Fear the Walking Dead style character exposition at the end where Arnold had to explain what he was doing, mercifully killing kids so they wouldn't grow up like him. I was a little more forgiving of that, given that you have to do it all in 45 minutes, you know, and I would say the villains in these have been the least they've been the most comic booky because they are the heroes are the ones that get more developed in the series, so the villains seem more villainy.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Like in the Alpha episode, that guy. Anyway.
Oh yeah. The guy that jumped off the boat.
Yeah. So he goes on, what's up with the murky greenish liquid just lying around in the garage where Davin accidentally kills the woman? Some kind of acid? Why? I don't get it.
Yeah, I'm still with you on that. I still don't understand.
It's the milk kids, but I don't know. I also didn't understand where'd they get it from anyway. That's a good point. I also didn't understand why Nora yelled mercy when the mob was gathered around Arnaud. Then she slapped him and other villagers kicked him and threw him into the pit with the chompers. Is she claiming Davin gets mercy, but not Ardone? At that point, we know Davin is innocent, so he doesn't need mercy. Who are they showing mercy to? Well, it's all about sometimes, what did they say? Killing is the greatest mercy, or murder is mercy. That's what Amanda says a couple of times. So she's saying, this is your
sometimes
mercy.
Sometimes murder is mercy. Yeah.
He goes on, finally, let's use that spare backhoe we have lying around to crush Davin to death, then feed him to the chompers. What the fuck? That really made no sense. And I guess it runs on lamp oil, which they apparently have an endless supply of, especially to use to run a backhoe. Ugh.
Fred, I didn't know that they were called backhoes, and that's just made my day. So yeah, thank you for that. I was like, big digger.
All right, we got a few calls. Here is Greg.
Hey, Jason, Lucy, this is Greg. Yeah. So, Devon, got a little bit of feedback last night, but I really like this episode. I thought that the darkness of it was really cool. I really like the whodunit style of like layout, and I am totally digging this as like a standalone style of episode. I thought it was great. If you don't want to use this because I talked a bunch about the same stuff last night, that's cool. Looking forward to hearing you guys talk about it more. Probably come up with some more crazy stuff that I didn't think of. All right, bye.
Greg talked with his wife about it, so I'm just kidding. He's saying that because he was on the instant feedback episode with us. And so if you like Greg's voice, you should go watch that.
Yeah, it was you, Greg, and Wendy.
And Wendy,
which was really fun.
Yeah, it's really fun. And I might rotate some people in for future ones.
You will not see me because it will be very late.
It's too hard. It's 3 a.m. for you. Come on, be dedicated. No, I'm just kidding.
Be dedicated. Get up. I'm like, you would not want to see me at 3 in the morning. I would hate everything.
You're just like, this fucking sucked.
I was like, this is terrible. Why am I awake?
All right, here is Jess.
Hey Jason, hey Lucy.
Hey.
I'm gonna make this super short. Loved six. Oh dang, it was episode 5, right? Devin or Devon, whatever. It was okay. I expected a little bit more, but you know, hopefully once I hear the pod and y'all tell me, you know, what really me thinking outside the box, it's gonna help so much. By the way, I am watching. Oh, sorry, this is Jessica from Georgia. I am watching Murder Only Murderers in the Building.
Ooh.
And we got Dakota on here. Mm. She act like she can't act. I don't understand it. Thank y'all. Bye.
Amazing. That was awesome. You know, I started watching the first season of that and dug it, but just got distracted and never finished it up. And now there's 2 seasons out. I need to get back to it because that's Steve Martin and Martin Short and...
what a cast.
What's the
like, what a
singer
cast.
Girl?
Selena Gomez.
Selena Gomez. And they play off each other really well.
This weekend, for reasons that are no doubt obvious to anyone who's been watching the news, we have a bank holiday on Monday, and I am looking forward to catching up on some TV that I have not had a chance to watch yet, and that is on the list.
Nice.
Yep.
Okay. I got to get back to it. We have one more call. It's from Steve. I really hope it's his live Steve so we can hear him process this episode in real time.
Live Steve.
Hello, Walking Dead cast. This is Steve, and this is for Tales of the Walking Dead, Devon. Dude, you better... Oh, okay, he just woke up, and there's a zombie on top of him. Okay, what's going on? This guy is hallucinating, and they're all looking for him. Okay, he's handcuffed to this zombie. I'm assuming it's a zombie and that it's dead, but he's like, if you're going to talk, you're going to walk. So now it's walking with him. Huh? Yes, I think you're going crazy. Okay, now the hallucinating zombie is telling him where to go by pointing. Okay, well, now he has separated himself from the zombie, finally. And by the way, I wouldn't normally notice these kind of things, but this soundtrack is just hauntingly great. The noir kind of feel to it. Mm. The cinematography on this has a very old school film kind of feel to it as well. Or I guess it's just the flashback sequences have that film kind of cinematography to them. I keep using that word. Banana is just banana in English and French, I guess, from what this kid is speaking. Banan. French. Or no, it's another Walker hallucination. Or no, he's hallucinating a Walker. That's weird. Oh, 897 is the house address. Okay. That's a big strawberry. Strawberry? Okay. So now he says they're in the basement. What's the thing they're doing with their hands? And now they're all finding each other, and he's going to get out of the van to go find the kids that are alive. Oh, so he locked them together to stop her. Oh, so Arnold was killing the kids, not his mom. After Devon's speech, they're just going to beat this kid to death? No, they're throwing him in the pit with the kids that he killed. Oh, and that's the end. He just walks away. Gosh, man, these have been really good episodes, so can't wait to hear you talk about this one.
That was great.
That was incredible. I love it.
I'm glad you liked it, Steve.
I've just realized that all my knowledge of French vocabulary comes from Flight of the Conchords, Fou de Fafa. I'm like, oh yeah, that's how I know the words for fruit.
It's le banan, right?
Banana. Oui. Banan. Ananas. Camembert. Anyway, yes, yes, yes. Just really making sure we never have any French listeners ever again there.
Je regrette.
No regret, rien.
Excusez-moi. All right, that is our show, episode 479. Thanks so much for listening, everybody.
Merci beaucoup.
Merci beaucoup.
Merci beaucoup.
If you would like to write in, leave us a message. You can find all our contact information, including a little button that you can use to talk to us at podcastica.com.
And while you're there, be sure to check out our other shows, of which there are so many right now. Yeah. I couldn't even list them all.
Are you watching House of the Dragon? You should be listening to Rima and Kristen and Rennie with their extensive deep book talks segment. That's one I would definitely recommend. It's called Dragon Cast. You can find it on podcastica.com.
Yes, and we've also got the Rings of Power cast with Anwen and Penny.
Excellent.
Which I'm going to be on next week.
Oh,
so
cool.
I need to start revising my Elvish and getting on board with that. Yeah, there's loads of cool stuff to check out. It's awesome.
One more I'll mention is I didn't even know we were going to be able to cover this, but I'm so glad that Jonathan Bukalil stepped up. He's got a friend, James, who's in the business. He actually works on some Star Trek shows, but they're covering Andor, the upcoming series that's a prequel to a prequel. It's the prequel to Rogue One, which I thought was a great Star Wars movie. And
Rogue One was excellent.
They just put out an episode about Rogue One in anticipation of the series. It's, you can find that on our Star Wars TV cast or on House Podcastica. And yeah, I'm excited for coverage of that. The trailer looks awesome, so I hope the series is anywhere near as good as the trailer makes it look.
I haven't watched the trailer. Have they got the Rogue One cast?
Actually, I mean, at the beginning of Rogue One, that's when the characters met, Andor and Jyn Erso. So I don't think Jyn Erso is going to be in it because they hadn't met yet.
Okay.
But cool. Andor, it's about him, like, in the beginning stages of the rebellion, I guess.
Diego Luna.
Yeah,
great.
Diego Luna.
Love it. Love it.
So, this episode is made possible by Patreon supporters like Joe Graff, who pledged their support at patreon.com/JasonCabassi. So, thank you, Joe, and everyone else who's doing that. If you want to get ad-free episodes and just kick in a little bit to help support, you can do that at patreon.com/JasonCabassi.
And I also think you should come see us in San Francisco.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We have, I think, around, I would say about 75 people who are going to be there as it is right now, just kicking back in this theater that's like a giant living room watching the Walking Dead finale in the San Francisco Bay Area. We've got an Alcatraz trip planned too, and a couple other things we're all going to have drinks together. And it's the weekend of the Walking Dead finale, and you can find out more at podcastica.com/TWD finale party. Jump on in with us.
I can't wait. It's going to be so cool.
Me too. It's going to be really fun. All right. That is our show.
Thanks for listening.
Don't get bit, Jeremy Marsh.
You murderer.
You killed me.